Greetings! This is the Slow Dive Podcast. I am Farida, your nerdy older sister friend in film and community. Today we have a special guest who is a pioneer in impact producing and in film with us. Joining us from Brooklyn, New York, we have multimedia producer, impact producer, storyteller, educator, public media advocate, Cecilia Mejia. Welcome, Cecilia. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the warm welcome.
No, thank you for joining us. Well, we'll just dive right in with our icebreakers. Sure. I have to ask you before we get into the deep dive and impact world, what are you reading currently?
Is there something you're reading? What am I reading currently? Well, I've been reading a lot of travel magazines like Condé Nast. There are a few books like behind me that I could take a look, but I actually have been trying to read 100 Years of Solitude. So I've always been told to read that book, and it just, every time I start it, it's like I have to kind of keep rereading because it's such an intellectual book. So I'm trying to get that through that book.
Oh my God, that sounds so fascinating. Is that like a memoir? Is it like a psych book? What is that?
No, it's like, it's sort of kind of in the vein of The Alchemist, sort of like within that like realm type of book. So, which is my favorite book. But my cousin has always told me about this particular book because it's like, it talks about like life and choices we make. And so I'm trying to read it and trying to get through like the first couple of chapters. It's just it's one of those, like, you really have to like catch every word that you're reading kind of novel.
I love that. You just introduced me to another book to add to my Kindle list. Cause this is, I mean, yes, that's, yeah. That sounds interesting. I will check that out. What would you be doing if you weren't in the impact and entertainment world, Cecilia?
That's a good question. I mean, I would love to have done maybe international affairs, foreign affairs. Like I had an aunt who did that, and she was like in different places all over the world. She was in London, she was here in New York for a long time, and then she was in different parts of Asia. So I always like never thought about that as a job, even though she had that position. And now that I think back on it, I probably would have really enjoyed that. Yeah.
So that's why you're reading Condé Nast.
Yes, that's why. I'm like itching to travel, especially like I love New York, but I don't know, it's getting a little crowded here. It's also summer is not my favorite time in New York, so. Yeah, getting a little itchy to travel and be in other places.
I 100% resonate with that because that's something that I need to do more of. But yeah, it's been kind of tough to get out of LA too, just with work and everything. But yeah, now, yeah. I know I love Condé Nast. It's funny that you mentioned that because a lot of people don't talk about that publication. But when I was a kid and I had to do like vision boards and mood boards, I would get Condé Nast and old Nat Geos, which are now collectors, and like cut them up for my vision board. But it was funny because travel has always been a thing. But
that's funny that you say that, because I did a staff retreat for my staff, and we all wanted to do like physical vision boards, and I was the only one that had like a subscription. Yeah, it was all Condé Nast Traveler.
So that's amazing.
Like, very limited, I guess, in a way, but also very expansive.
It's very niche. That's why it's so hilarious. It's great that we brought Condé Nast back into the mainstream by mentioning this. But I think that's also a thing, and I know we're not going to get into this too much, but like you're on the East Coast, and so the publication world, the publishing industry, that's like the hub. So I think that's one of the wonderful things that we get from like New York is those insights and those leads on books and all that. So
oh yeah.
All right. Well, we'll start with we'll dive right into our first segment, which we'll talk about. How do you define impact producing in narrative film? If someone did not know that, how would you define it as a producer?
Well, impact producing really is more naturally aligned with documentary film. So when you think about it in the narrative sense, there's a little bit more layers and complexities, but overall in film and in storytelling, impact producing, if I want to simplify it, is when you have this feeling when you watch a film, you're fueled to to find out more information about the issues that were just talked about in the film, or you, there's a call to action, you feel like you need to do something or find your place in it. It's that next step of what that is. And an impact producer is someone who carries that call to action, brings that forth into the communities that are in most need of, like, you know, the support, whether they're the community groups that are doing the work on the ground or the community groups that are actually underserved and under-resourced. So impact producing is a lot of layers. It's not marketing. It's really how a film lives beyond the screen, especially a film that has a lot of has really strong social impact components, like something like mental health or racial injustice, and how that carries on into communities and can really inspire people to take action. But also, you know, for me, I really think the basis of impact producing is really having critical and constructive conversations. I really believe that film and storytelling has that power to be able to get people to really understand each other and understand different layers. So impact producing is a lot more prevalent in documentary film, but I see a lot of narrative fiction films. Like Participant was doing that for a very long time until they closed down, unfortunately. But there are a lot of really interesting and really impactful films out there that are also very artful. Something like Just Mercy, which was like a couple of years ago, was probably one of those films that was what they call it, like impact entertainment type of films. But I know that there was like a really strong impact campaign around that. But yeah, I'm kind of running in circles a little bit, but impact producing is that it's that next step of the call to action that you feel, whether it's to have a conversation or do research or do more when you watch a film and you're inspired.
No, I love that. And as I was telling our producer previously, that I took one of your courses at NYU and I kind of fell into impact producing, and I'm not, of course, as a master, I haven't put my 1,000 hours into it, but I remember learning so much from what you were talking about, and you had given some excellent examples of narrative films as well. And I was like, you know what? And that was like a couple of years ago, actually. And now there's even more need for social issue filmmaking or social impact entertainment. I just wanted to say, I feel like you're a pioneer, and I think you kind of, the word had not been used, not in the lexicon like it is now. I feel like after around 2019, people were starting to like shift into the narrative filmmaking world and thinking, oh, we want to give back to the community. And that's when I was like, I've already been doing that on micro docs and documentaries, but I didn't know how to translate that into that. And I was researching and I came across your coursework and I was like, hey, I've been doing this somewhat in the nonprofit world, but I did not know what it meant to do it in narrative. But then you kind of broke it down really well. Are you still teaching at NYU those courses?
Yes, I am teaching. I'm actually going to start teaching again in the fall. So I'll bring that class.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. I really loved it. But what I was going to say, how did you get into impact producing? I mean, you're also a producer, you're a storyteller, filmmaker. Mm-hmm. How did you get into that? Is that something you kind of started off in your career, or did you find yourself there?
Well, you know, I'll backtrack a little bit with my, I guess, film career, when you call it that. When I graduated from my master's program, I really had the intention of working in the public space. At some point, I was at the UN working with a lot of NGOs there. And then that's how I met a couple of filmmakers who were doing really interesting things in the field and really talking about the issues that we were talking about at the UN. And they brought me in to do some of the research, the development, and some of the grant writing, which really was my specialty in the nonprofit space. So I was doing a lot of that work. And then one filmmaker in particular was really took me under her wing and brought me into the film world, which eventually became the feature film Yellow Rose. You know, as I was learning my way in the film world, I was still felt the call and the need to really work in the community. The UN, I always say, like, the UN was such an interesting experience, and, you know, I love to kind of figure out how to go back there someday, but I felt like I needed to go back into the community. So I ended up in this nonprofit organization called Scenarios USA, where we were working with young kids in schools and talking to them about the issues that they that was relevant to them and important to them, and creating films out of the stories that they were telling. And then making lesson plans out of them with really regarded educators. So that in that sense, that was like my way of merging both the nonprofit philanthropic side and the film side. And then a filmmaker by the name of PJ Raval, who I collaborate often with, was like, I'm finishing up my feature documentary, Call Her Gunda, and I would love for you to come on as an impact producer. And that was the first time I ever heard that terminology. And I asked him, like, what is that? And he's like, it's basically like what you're doing now. You're taking films, you're bringing it to the community, and you're trying to see how film can create some sort of impact in the world. And so I was like, okay, I'm in. And you know, I really saw how natural it was for me to phase into that. You know, I feel like everything I had been doing led up to impact producing. So that was really the first start of that, like being on that team for Call Her Gunda. And then it really just felt very natural to take on that role in other projects that I was on. So that's really how it all started. But yeah, I feel like I'm still continuing to learn. So I have a lot of mentors in the field that I'm really lucky to have. Not sure if I'm quite the pioneer, but I think, like you said, it was always something that I was already doing. I just didn't know that there was like a term for it or an actual job for it in the film world.
No, but I'm so glad that term is now being used. And what qualifies someone to be an impact producer, I think it's important. Something you said, not marketing, because that's something people confuse that with marketing. And it's actually strategy and community building. And correct me if I'm wrong, advocacy maybe, awareness, all of that. And there's so much more than just marketing. Cecilia, so now that you've defined impact producing, especially in narrative film, what is your goal as an impact producer in film and working with filmmakers? What kind of projects do you like to take on? What are some deciding factors? And if you could, refer to some of your amazing projects that your company, Remedious Productions, has worked on, that would be wonderful.
Sure. I would say for narrative, it's a little bit different versus documentary. With narrative, obviously there's like the process of understanding the script, or even if I'm involved early enough to help develop the script, there's the time that's taken there. And I also really start to think, I start to analyze within the story who's telling the story and how they have access to it, how they understand it, how it relates to them. So in part, it's also the filmmaker, because these projects take a really long time, and it's investing in a marriage sometimes, or in a long-term relationship, especially in narrative films. There's just such a long haul in really trying to get those started in the independent film space, at least. And then with documentaries, I feel more of a sense of urgency, because in my experience, a lot of the films that I've been involved with have really timely issues. And there feels like this sense of urgency that this should come out, like with Who We Become, which really didn't start that way. But we had, we won a grant to be able to film in March of 2020. And then obviously the world kind of stopped, and much to the filmmaker's credit, PJ Raval, who I often collaborate with, we pivoted and we did things virtually. And so there was this urgency in it coming out. So that's how I feel a lot with documentaries. And I felt really close to the issue. And that's also something that I look for, to feel like I have an understanding really of the issue, especially if I have to, or if I am looked at to lead or be part of the impact campaign. I need to feel like I care about the issues and about the protagonists. And also, it's also like how I see the filmmaker working with them and working with the story. So, someone like PJ Raval, who really takes his time and understands the communities that he works with, it's very easy for me to be part of those kinds of projects. And lately, now that I have a little bit more experience under my belt, I'm also looking for projects that challenge me in a way. I definitely want to do a comedy film or even a horror, but, you know, I've also been looking at, like, animation, too, I think, I've done shorts that have, like, animation components in them, but never done an animation before, which I would love to be part of, so I'd like to be challenged in that way, too.
And I feel like all those genres and types of storytelling can benefit from an impact producer and a campaign, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I don't know how you feel about this, but, like, it is nice to get out of the documentary world for a little bit and get into the narrative sphere and try to work with other subjects, lighter maybe in themes, but also have a community element or advocacy awareness element. Yeah, and animation would be a wonderful space to get into.
Well, yeah. Like, if I had an ideal film to work on now, it would definitely be something like Everything Everywhere All at Once, because immediately when I saw that film, I started building an impact campaign in my head, but it was also a really fun film to watch at the same time. So
maybe the filmmakers will reach out. We should reach out to them now. I mean, you can still do an educational curriculum kit, a community screening. I need that.
I would love to. If the Daniels or A24.
Yeah, Daniels, A24, reach out to Cecilia Mejia, Remedia's production, because why not? Right? Like, I think what you said earlier, that a lot of the impact work is getting the conversation started. And I think when you see, like you said, sitting down with the filmmakers and getting their why behind why they're making this film, you saw in their speech, their Oscar speech and all that, why, how long it took to make that film and why they made it. So I think there is something there. And
so many different layers. And it's also one of those films where it doesn't hit you over the head with a lot of the issues that could be talked about, which is also like something I'd like to look for.
Well, the Daniels should definitely reach out to you, or you should reach out to their team, because I think you can still, like you said earlier, if having a conversation about social issues or themes using different genres, I think we need that. But I wanted to also talk about Sisters on Track, a Netflix original. Tell me how you worked on that and how you incorporated impact producing into that project.
So that project, I was brought on solely as an impact producer and to lead the impact campaign. And so by the time I got involved, Netflix was already getting ready to distribute the film. That was actually fairly new to me, to have a film already lined up with distribution. Normally I'm part of, you know, in the independent film world, we're always struggling to find distribution after festival run. But, and you know, so like when you're thinking about the impact campaign there, you're always thinking about access. So in that sense, with Sisters on Track, we knew that access, people who had Netflix at the very least had access to the film. But that also is not the case for a lot of communities. A lot of people don't have access to Netflix. So that was something that I had to build into the campaign, thinking about access for especially for schools, if that was something that we wanted to screen the film in schools. So it was something we had talked about really early on with Netflix, that if we could give free screeners to certain communities, was that something that we could build in? And that's something that you have to really think about when you're building an impact campaign, how the audience has access to the film.
Access. And something earlier you touched on, if we can revisit it, was public media access and POV. Yeah. And how does that support impact filmmakers and storytellers?
Oh, I think, you know, having now been embedded in it for, I've been in my position for almost a year now and really understanding the public media space. And truthfully, like PBS has stood the test of time. And it really is, you know, with POV particularly, it's point of view, where we're representing different points of views around the world and points of views of these storytellers. And so it really is designed for impact. You know, going back to access, public media is accessible to everybody. Not everybody knows that, but you know, I hope someday people will know that they have that access. But if, you know, a lot of filmmakers do seek us out because they do have an intention with their film to be brought to communities and to have educational toolkits, but also to really, you know, exist beyond the broadcast or beyond the screen and really live in the community space and live in the impact space. So they really do look for us filmmakers in that sense. And I think because we also are a nonprofit that runs POV, the films are are seen in different ways in the community. They're looked at as really, you know, like I said, conversation starters, but also tools to really create change.
Tools to create change. That's excellent. Yeah, that's how I see storytelling. Conversation and community. Those are the two markers, right? Like, I mean, why not already take the audience's experience and take it a step further, mm-hmm. and continue, like you said, the legacy of the film. Another project that you worked on, your company, is called Come and Take It, which is a documentary. Mm-hmm. Tell mm-hmm. us about that.
So Come and Take It, I was also brought on as an impact producer. That came to me during the pandemic. I feel like it was right before, like around this time, that election year. The filmmaker, PJ Raval, who I had mentioned earlier, I often collaborate with, was like, I have this short film about this activist who was really pushing the agenda around campus carry laws because she had discovered that it was a misdemeanor to hold a dildo or anything that represented that part of a male body, but it wasn't to hold a gun in school. And so she had created this campaign called Cocks Not Glocks, and that film followed her. And really what we had discovered, naturally you would think that film, the impact campaign, would be about gun control and campus carry laws. But really when the filmmakers approached me, particularly PJ, was like, let's think about activism. And so that's something that we had talked about, like, you know, what's the time now? And we're in this election year, let's make sure people are registered to vote. So that campaign ran for 3 months, and our goal was to get people to register to vote and then to understand the issues that are important to them and civic engagement and to understand the communities that are involved in all of that work, but also to go beyond the vote and beyond the election to really start caring about your community. Like, I really love that project because, you know, working with Jessica Jin, who is the main protagonist, she and I, well, I helped her create this Jessica Jin's Guide to Activism, which I think, you know, was built upon the lessons that she had learned, because that was just really the birth of her activism. And she's doing a lot of really great things now. So it's really interesting.
She's based out of Texas, right? She's a Texas
woman? She was based out of Texas. I have no idea where she is now, because when we were working on the campaign, she had already graduated from UT Austin, and at the time I think was somewhere in California and has been all over the world.
Yeah, reason I say that is because I remember mm-hmm. coming across that really bold title. What was it? Cocks Not Glocks.
Cocks Not Glocks. Yeah, yeah.
And I remember coming across the GoFundMe or the Seed and Spark or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that is hilarious, because that contrast that you drew, that it's totally okay to carry that, but, you know, like, you can't carry that, but you can carry that. I think that was really genius, and it stayed in the minds of a lot of people. You said PJ Raval, you're also working with the filmmaker on Who We Become, right? And that's...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That film is on Netflix now. So we were working on that film during the pandemic. We had originally started it off as a series and pivoted when obviously the world stopped, and we discovered these really incredible stories about these three young women in Texas who were in different stages of their lives, really dealing with everything that we were dealing during the pandemic, including Black Lives Matter movement with George Floyd, and then all of the stuff around Asian hate, and then, you know, obviously with like this major pandemic going on, but the election was really the culmination of all of that. And so we really were lucky to find a home with Array to help bring that to Netflix so that we can get eyes on the film and people really talking about these issues that we talk about. But the real heart of the film is intergenerational conversations. So if you watch it, these three young women have really deep and, I would say, heartfelt conversations with their parents about issues. And they don't always agree, but it's also really refreshing to see these conversations where it's not, you know, I'm not going to talk to my family anymore because you know, they're voting for Trump or the other way around, or, you know, it's actual real conversations and really trying to understand each other. And that's something that I think, especially now, storytelling can do, can really get people to have these conversations and start to understand each other. Cause we can't live in this space where it's like either or we just don't want to talk to somebody because they don't believe in the same things that we believe in. It's not leading to a very cohesive environment or society.
No, I agree. I think now more than ever, any of the issues, especially in 2024, given where we're at politically and socially in this country, conversations, we have to be able to hold space and agree to disagree and just have a healthy exchange of ideas.
Yeah. I would say, healthy exchange, constructive conversations. And I would say, like, you know, what I've also come to realize in the couple of years and last few projects are the most impact I've seen is where people really sit in their discomfort and sit through it and learn from that. And I've had to sit in my discomfort a lot. Like I told people, like, you know, the biggest thing for me of the pandemic was I had to really check myself in things that I thought I knew. And I think I see the greatest impact when films are able to do that, to have those people not only having these conversations, but people going back and reflecting now and having sat in their discomfort and understand why it was uncomfortable for them.
Yes. I think we touched on this earlier before we move on to our final segment. I was going to say, being able to have measurable outputs and an impact campaign, whether it's a narrative or documentary versus cause marketing. How do you tell someone why it's not marketing? It's a lot more than that, if you could.
Sure. You know, I a couple of years ago, I was definitely like, this is not a marketing campaign. And, you know, I get it. I get that there's limited budget, especially for independent filmmakers. And even now, the window is narrowing for landscapes with, like, Participant, for example, closing down. There are very few spaces for independent films, especially independent documentaries, to really live. So that also equates to less resources to do marketing. And so I understand the need for things to coincide and things to live together. And I really do believe that a strong marketing campaign and an impact campaign can live cohesively together. But the big difference is that in an impact campaign, the goal is really change and to elevate the work that's happening around these issues and to have the film live beyond what it is already. And, you know, like PJ had said once, that his hope with the impact campaign for Call Her Gunda was that the film sort of left him at some point and did what it needed to do in the world, which is what it's doing. You know, it's been 5 years now or more. And that's what I think is the difference. Whereas with marketing, people obviously, and rightfully so, want eyes on the film. They want, you know, a lot of people to watch it or, you know, hopefully like see it in theaters or stream. And that also works well if there are people who are interested in coming involved, that there's an impact campaign. So there's a difference, but I do believe that they can work together.
Thank you for saying that, because I think that's an important distinction when someone, either producing teams or filmmakers, go out to employ an impact producer or a campaign, that they know the difference and why a good impact producer brings so much more to their projects than just a market. Nothing wrong with marketing, but it's a lot, like you said, it's a lot more heavy lifting of the actual story and the legacy of it. Yeah. Okay, the future of entertainment. We talked about Participant a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. I think it was a very sad time for all of us to learn that earlier this year. What do you think is now, is there going to be a replacement for Participant? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Array has an impact element, they're doing Array release, but where do we go now as producers who support projects and they're looking for distribution? What do you think is the future of that? I just, to get your take on it.
You know, it's the industry right now, it's a little, there's a lot of questions. I know a lot of filmmakers are there, like I said earlier, there's less and less places for their films to live and to go, and less resources for them in general. But I do think, you know, having, again, like, not to go back to public media, but there we've existed for a really long time. PBS has stood the test of time and hopefully still does pass this election. So I would think, at least for independent documentary films, that there is a home for them. You know, there, we can't do everything at POV, but then there's Independent Lens. You know, there's other entities out there. I would hope that the big giants, like the streamers, would also put their focus a little on these independent documentaries, not just holding space for them on their platforms, but really giving them the tools, even just a little bump in like marketing or something, or you know, giving them the leeway to talk to communities. I think I would hope that these streamers are including that in when they are taking on these independent films. So there was a recent talk with, I won't name who it was, he kind of influential in the space now and really figuring out algorithms and really helping the community of filmmakers. So I think they've done a lot of incredible work, but he said that the problem now in the industry is that there's a lot of films, like documentaries, that are nutritious and not delicious. And so I thought that was really interesting because, you know, I can't speak for other spaces, but POV, we really, the filmmakers are artists. Mm-hmm. Documentary filmmakers are artists. And what I think the future of this industry is really dependent upon us supporting these artists and how we uplift them and how we continue to help to get their stories out there. And, you know, that's what we're doing at POV. We're very selective and very particular about the stories that we want to tell and we want to uplift. But films, incredible films, can also have incredible impact. And it's not just one or the other, I think. And that's what I think the future of film is. I think there is a way that this is also nutritious and delicious, as he says, not just one or the other. But I do think the future of film is dependent upon the people that are currently supporting independent filmmakers, because they are the ones that are telling these really important and valuable stories.
Yeah, I feel like that's the scary part, at least for myself, also in the indie space currently. I hope to work with larger budgets, but I think for all of us, we're like, we can make projects. How do we get them to our audience? How do we make change with that? And the streamers definitely have the capacity and the funding to give a little extra in the distribution to maybe the impact teams and the marketing teams to push that. But have you found, though, when you come on as a producer, impact producer, that it helps a film to have an impact producer gain funding? Or, I mean, I know a lot of the role is grant writing too and finding funding, but not necessarily all the time. Like sometimes you just do the campaign. But in your experience, do you think it makes it more viable for investors or people who want to fund the project, knowing that there's this community element to it?
It depends on the funder. In my experience, I've always seen them. I've been lucky enough to be part of projects where funders are definitely interested in that element, because then they also see that the film has a longer shelf life, which is something of value and interest to them. And I think I'd mentioned before that there's really no expiration date for some of these films, a lot of the times when you're thinking about it in the impact space. And so I think it does depend on the funder and what they understand of impact, but it certainly hasn't hurt. I haven't seen it hurt the film.
Well, Cecilia, you have done some amazing work on many, many amazing films. We talked of Yellow Rose, Call Me Ganda, Who We Become most recently, Lingua Franca. Is there a Come and Take It, a documentary, Sisters on Track, which you said kind of introduced the whole first documentary series that brought on like Colgate and Palmolive as a sponsor to talk about track competition, and that's a film I have not seen yet, but I'm definitely going to check it out on Netflix. Yeah. And is there a project you're working on right now that you can share or that you're excited about, or aside from the animation stuff that you want to work on in the future, but is there something that we haven't talked about?
Well, there are a few, there are a few narratives that I'm attached to. One was the, in the top five, one the fan favorite for the Tribeca AT&T Untold Stories Award. That's a film that I have been in development for a little bit, and I really love the filmmaker. There's one film in particular that like really has run the festival circuit in a really interesting way, and it's a hybrid documentary, which is also something I really love, hybrid comedy documentary. Oh, wow. It's called Asog, which is, it's A-S-O-G, and it's this film by this comedian, filmmaker slash activist, Sean Devlin. He's in, he's Canadian. Him and his partner, Amanda, incredible team, brought to life this film, which really speaks to climate survivors in the Philippines, but also brought in this comedic element to it. So it does talk about land grabbing, and which is also really relevant to what's happening a lot now. And mm-hmm. it's a really important film because activists in the environmental space are threatened every day. And in the Philippines, some of them lose their lives, and it's really dangerous for them, or their red tag. So this is a really important film. It's a very touching film. It's a very funny film. It's very unique. It premiered at Tribeca last year, and I'm hoping that at some point it'll find distribution home. But it was part of Cannes Docs last year as well, and has done a really great festival run. I'm an EP on that film. I'm also working as an impact producer, and we've been working a lot with Doc Society to try to build out an impact campaign. That film is a really interesting one in that there are measurable outcomes because it follows this one particular area in the Philippines where the developers actually promised to build resources and homes for the people that were displaced. And there's a actual number in which that they had promised to do that, the amount of homes. So there's a measurement there, and the reason why there's a little bit of a delay is because that's happening, and we don't want to, we don't want to impede progress. But it's a very interesting film. Yeah.
So they're building housing for people who have been displaced due to the climate effects. Mm-hmm. What is that? What is the name of that film again?
It's called Asog. A-S-O-G.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a hybrid documentary.
That is so fascinating. I've never heard of a hybrid documentary, so I'm really excited to watch it when it comes out. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, climate, a lot of displacement due to conflict and climate, unfortunately. It's paying it forward by building housing. And I think that's pretty amazing, Cecilia. That's wonderful. Can you talk about your community work with American Documentary and Asian Cinevision?
So with Asian Cinevision, I'm on the board. John Woo was one of the old school filmmakers who really gave me the sound advice that I needed and really talked me through the industry and continues to really be a support for a lot of up and coming independent filmmakers, especially in the Asian American space. And so it's my way of thanking him and the organization, because the organization also helped Yellow Rose get the initial funding it needed, at least to get off the ground. So, they continue to exist to really support the Asian American community. They have their festival every year, and the next one, I think it's the 47th installation of the festival, the Asian American International Film Festival, which Asian Cinevision runs, has leaned a lot now towards documentaries, which is also like really cool, since that's something that I've done in the last couple of years. So that's the work with Asian Cinevision. And with American Documentary, I'm the VP of External Affairs. So my focus is really the external storytelling of the organization and the work that we do. We have an impact arm, which is run by my colleague, Asad Mohammed. He's the VP of Impact Engagement and Strategy on that team. And I like to support on the sidelines when I can, or really provide input. But overall, the organization is really focused on genuine, authentic storytelling, supporting independent filmmakers, and creating an impact with the films. And so our work is really embedded in that.
You are very busy, Cecilia.
Yes.
That's why you don't have time to finish that book.
I know.
You're too busy. But that's good. It's a good kind of busy. It's a good kind
of busy. Good kind of, it's a very good kind of busy. Every time I start to feel overwhelmed, I start to think about there are people who are tired and busy from work that they hate. So I'm very lucky that I'm tired and busy from work that I love. So
yes, no, that is a blessing indeed, for sure. Okay, well, I'm going to ask one more question about the Art of Me podcast, Power and Community. What is that about? Because that's an important little project that you also
on Spotify. So it's on Spotify. It's like fourth, fifth year. I helped start that podcast, but this is really birthed out of, wanting to have more outlets to tell young people's stories and to give young people access to filmmakers and artists who are in the space. It also was around the pandemic, so this was a much easier way of doing things than waiting to do short films, which is what we were doing initially. But really, it's about power in community and really investing in your community. So how it really, how I got involved in it is that the executive director, Stephanie, she's from Cleveland, and that's really where the base of Art of Me lives. And I'm from Brooklyn, and we did a lot of work here. And we wanted to invest in our communities with young people and to be able to bring this kind of artistry to them. And the podcast really delves into that and really talks to people who are doing the work and giving insight and can be motivation for the young people that hopefully tune in to listen to the podcast, but also to like educators who and people who are listening to see what young people are interested in.
Out of all the amazing projects you're doing, is there a favorite project that stands out, or is there one that you just, you like to revisit, or you're really proud of? I mean, I'm sure they're all great, but like, is there one that is your favorite project so far that you worked on?
Oh, I don't know if I have a favorite. It's hard to say. I've learned so much on each of them. Yellow Rose obviously will always have a special place in my heart because it was the first one. But I probably say because of who I worked with and collaborated with, and because of where it landed with Array, it would be who we become. I'm really proud of it because we didn't even have that many resources to put it together, and we put it together in the time when other people had to stop their projects. Mm-hmm. And then obviously having to work side by side with PJ, which was really nice because it not often does a filmmaker work with a producer as a actual true collaborator and gives you like that 50-50 credit in things. And I really felt that respect in that way. So that for me personally, that was really important. And I think it reflected a lot in the work, but it was also the community. I think one of the big reasons why I'm really proud of that film is it was all Asian producing team. Even the editing was done in the Philippines. Animation was done by Filipinos. And I'm really proud that we were able to pull that off.
I love that. True collaboration and respect. That speaks volumes, because I think as filmmakers, whether you're a director, producer, impact producer, or any of the above, really when we come into it, it is a commitment. And like you said earlier, like a marriage, you are tied to a project for a long time. Collaboration is really the key. And I mean, I'm glad that you said that, because I think, and this may sound a little biased, I'm not as advanced, I'm just in the short film space right now in impact, but I do feel respect is important, because all the heavy lifting to keep that project going and I don't know if you feel like this, but like the original purpose and mission behind why that story was made. Why did you write that script, or why did you make that documentary? Like, really to get inside the head of the director, writer, director, or the filmmaker. Like, what is that? And then being able to push that out into the world, I think takes a lot of energy and commitment from impact producers. Because if you're not connecting with the material, how are you going to do it justice and push it out there? So respect, I think I'm glad you said that. So we will move on to our final segment. Cecilia, I've learned so much about your work and your dedication to impact producing and all the contributions you made in our film community. And I really thank you for that. What does community mean to you?
That's a good question. I'm still trying to understand what it means to me, but I'm slowly realizing that community is in many ways like a home. It's finding people who not only like share your interests and your passions, but also challenge you in ways that make you better and really support you. It's also another thing where I find like the independent film community is very small, especially in the BIPOC space, and then even more so in the documentary space. And so to have community that really supports your work and understands your passion for the work, understands why you maybe don't answer that call sometimes, or you don't answer the email right away, I find that to be community. But at the end of the day, I really see community as like a stability in some ways, where things feel a little bit like now, like things feel a little bit off, and there's at least this space where you feel understood and you can really relate to people who are doing the same thing that you are, and not competing, I would say, but thriving together.
I love that. What motivates you to continue to create and produce?
I would say because there's so many stories to tell and they're not often told, and so that motivates me to be able to help these stories come to light.
What is your ideal future project? You said earlier animation horror.
Well, I mean, I want to do like a, I would say like a Jordan Peele kind of horror film where you're like really thinking about it at the end of the day. But a dream project would be, yeah, it would be something like that, or an animation or comedy. I think comedy is really hard to pull off, so it would be fun to be able to do something like that. But I would say, you know, I've done a lot of films where I think it was really obvious, or it was pretty clear that there was some social impact component to it. And I'd like to do a film where it's not so obvious, where there's a lot more layers to really think about and nuances. But I'd love to be on set again and to have a lot of fun on set. So, but yeah, something like Everything Everywhere, which I think was like one in a billion, but something that has a lot of different layers and multi-genres in it, I would be an ideal project.
Love that. And you don't have any budgetary guidelines, like they have to be, you're open to indie budgets and of course a larger budget.
Of course, yeah. I'm open to any budget that is reasonable enough for people, especially below the line, are going to get paid.
Okay, last question. What does the world need more of right now?
I think we need more grace. I really do. I think even in the storytelling space, like I think there's a lot of like, and I said it earlier, it matters who tells the story, but sometimes we need to dig in a little bit more and not just look at the surface. I'm not going to name a film, but there was a film that, and I ate my words after, there was a film where I was like, oh, this person doesn't get to tell the story about, you know, the Brooklyn. And I was just really, coming from Brooklyn, was like, no, and very like adamant about it. And then having sat at a screening of the film and hearing from the protagonists in it and the reception, they're like, this filmmaker is really respected in how they entered the community, and we really trust that they were able to tell the story. And so I really ate my words there, but realized that in that moment that they could have used a lot more grace from me instead of me like immediately saying they don't get to tell the story and not really understanding. So I think there's a lot of that going on, and the world needs a little bit more grace.
Thank you so much, Cecilia, for joining us today. I think we had a very insightful conversation on the importance of impact storytelling, entertainment, and production in these uncertain times. How can we reach out to you? I know you're on LinkedIn, Cecilia Mejia, and we'll be sharing more information on our website. Is that the best place to reach out to you if someone's looking for you?
Yeah, LinkedIn is usually the best space. People have often found me on Instagram, and it's a private account, so sometimes I won't see it if you message me, but LinkedIn, I see it all the time. And then through NYU too has been another way.
If you're looking for an amazing impact producer who has made significant contributions to our film community, please reach out to Cecilia Mejia, and you can find her on LinkedIn, and she's, and watch her films.
Watch
her films. They're on Netflix. We will be sharing some of those links in our newsletter and on our website once this episode is live. Thank you, Cecilia, for joining our newbie podcast. I hope you had a good time.
Yeah, I did. Thanks for all the insightful questions. And I would also like to add, with American Documentary, POV is in its 37th season, and we are looking for season 38 films. And so the call for submissions are open until the 31st of July. If anyone, any documentary filmmakers out there feel like their film is ready for POV, feel free to submit.
Till next time, I am Farida. This is a Slow Dive podcast. Let's make an impact one episode at a time.